Welcome to the Electric Podcast, everyone. This week, I'm sorry, I'm going to apologize for my voice right away. I'm a little bit sick, a little bit under the weather. But I'll tough it up and I'll do the whole show anyway. I think, Seth, you're not feeling 100% either?
No, those flights to and from LA are pretty bad.
Yeah, I think people, those recycled air in those airplanes are not the greatest for your health. And I haven't been sick in years too, so like if this one is hitting me hard for some reasons. Anyway, but yeah, like you just said, we are coming back from LA. It was the LA Auto Show. Generally, it's a pretty big one for electric vehicles, and it was this year too, I'd say. But for one main reason, that's Rivian unveiling two vehicles by themselves. So you take Rivian away from the show, wasn't as big of a year. I mean, you had Audi with the GT e-tron, wasn't bad. Updated the Soul EV. That's about it, really.
Yeah, I mean, the Soul EV looks like a cool car. It has the same drivetrain as the Kia Niro and the Hyundai Niro. Hyundai Kona, Kia Niro.
Yeah, that's a tough one to remember.
Right? I know. But yeah, but they all have 64 kilowatt hour batteries, 201 horsepower. You know, Kia's a little higher. The Soul's a little bit higher up, so it's probably not going to get the same mileage as the Niro, which has like a 260 mile range. Pretty impressive.
Still going to be easily over 200, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I would say very easily over 200. And, you know, it's a fun car. You're riding a little bit higher up. You can put some bigger stuff in the back. I think it'll be super popular if they actually try to sell it, which
won't happen. And they said it was a 2022, right? What was that about? Like, normally
it's a 2020 because they're releasing it in the second half of 2019.
Yeah.
Which, that
so they completely skipped the 2019 version. It was never unveiled. Never said anything about it.
Doesn't exist.
So it's going to be a 2019 model year, but it's going to be just the same as the 2018, which is not unusual. But they decided they wanted to make sure, hey, we haven't forgot the Soul EV. We're still updating it. So a year in advance is the 2020 version, which has the same powertrain of a vehicle that we introduced last year. I mean, it's not great.
No, and that was the best thing from any major car maker.
BMW, well, Audi is a major car maker too, man.
Oh yeah, but Audi again—that's 2021. That's
yeah, and it's a car that was that's gonna hit the market next year and was introduced like 2 years ago because it is really the Taycan with a new body on it, a beautiful new body, if you ask me. I mean,
it's a gorgeous car, but and it has. I mean, if you're gonna have a powertrain underneath it, the Porsche Taycan is probably the one you would want to pick. And you know, it's going to carry along with it that 800 volt charging system, so it's going to be able to charge somewhere around 270 kilowatts, which is, you know, much about two and change times faster than Tesla will currently charge at. So that's
that'll be really cool. 2021 though.
Yeah, 2021.
2021.
And, you know, it's funny.
There's no telling Tesla's cars off as they're going to charge. So.
Yeah. 3 years could be anything. Although they haven't changed much since launch. We're expecting the V3 announcement now early, pushed back from mid this year to late this year to early next year. So hopefully that one actually happens.
Yeah. So going back to the Auto Show, what was the most exciting is definitely the Rivian.
No question.
Both the cars, both vehicles that they unveiled, but mainly the electric pickup truck, if you ask me, because the SUVs, the SUV is pretty cool too. The R1S, it's fairly unique as far as an all-electric SUV, because even though I think the premium SUV space is definitely the one that's being electrified the fastest than any other segment, I mean, starting with the Model X years ago now, then the Jaguar I-Pace, if you want, consider it an SUV. But then there's the Audi e-tron now that's coming out. There's the Mercedes EQC coming out. So you have a ton of premium SUVs hitting the market in the next few years. But the R1S is more geared toward off-roading, and it has more capabilities, really. The 5,000 kilograms towing capacity is just, it's not nothing to scoff at. So, but then the pickup truck, there's just nothing else that's been even announced yet. Well, everybody's talking about the Tesla pickup truck, and Elon has already talked about some very impressive specs, but it's just vaporware for now until they actually unveil something in a working prototype, which Rivian says they have. Speaking of those specs, I mean, I call them unbelievable, and that's because I feel like they just said, okay, well, what's going to be the, what would be the perfect spec for a pickup truck? And then they release that, and then they try to make it. I hope that's not the case. I hope they actually, like, that's what they were able to do with a prototype, and that's what they aim to do with the production vehicle. But it's just very impressive. So it's based on a whole platform, like the skateboard platform that's basically become standard over the years now. But what they did that's very cool is that they're using quad motors. So four different motors, two per axles, one per, excuse me, per wheel, each with a capacity of 147 kilowatts. And the input to the gearbox can range between 300 kilowatts and 562 kilowatts. And those different power level are matched with different battery capacity. And those battery capacity are 105 kilowatt hours, 135 kilowatt hours, and 180 kilowatt hours. And those battery capacity matches ranges of 230 miles to 400 miles. Yeah, and that's just the powertrain level. If you start looking into the utility features of the vehicle, I mean, gross weight rating of 3,470 pounds. So that's a payload of 800 kilograms. And yeah, 3,400 those kilograms too. Sorry. Trailer weight ratings, like I said, for 5,000 kilograms, it's 11,000 pounds that you can tow. The main thing that we heard about in terms of the utility features that is not making people happy is the bed being a little bit too short. Bang length with the tailgate up 1,400 millimeters, so that 1.4 meters. So that's five feet.
Not even 5 feet. Almost 5 feet. Just kind of short.
Yeah, so
especially if, like, you're carrying a motorcycle or an ATV back there.
Yeah, that wouldn't really work. But then Rivian's point is that with that kind of towing capacity, then you buy a trailer and you tow that. Though, of course, that's not as useful in terms of, like, mobility if you have to go through a city or something in order to get where you want to go. But
yeah, you know, as far as stuff like surfboards or even lumber, they have that, like, the pass-through area.
Yeah, they call that the gear tunnel.
That seems like a pretty cool idea. I feel like that is something alone that kind of puts this thing, separates this thing from other pickup trucks.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it didn't take any space from the bed, I'm fine with it. And that doesn't look like it does, because it's sort of in the space in between the back seat and the rear wheel. So it doesn't look like it would affect the bed much. And hasn't affected the space on the back seat too. You have a lot of space on the back seat. The interior is very very premium, very luxurious. So it's really a premium pickup truck, which I like at that price, because we're talking about the $69,000 the starting price. That's for the 105 kilowatt hour version. They haven't released the prices for the 135-180 kilowatt hour versions, and those are the one that is going to be available first toward the end of 2020. So much like the Model 3 with Tesla, they are starting with the higher end version and gonna gradually, as production increases, they're gonna reach the base version. So the price, that the value of the vehicle really is going to depend on those price point at those level, because that's really when the vehicles start to be useful, really, because those range features and the energy capacity are interesting just for the pickup itself. I mean, 230 miles of range sounds good, but then you add a trailer to it, and for sure the range cars start to, the efficiency start to decrease rapidly. So if you want to make this truck really, they're not targeting like a commercial market. It's not targeting really fleet. It's for consumer products. So it doesn't need to be as rugged in terms of like, depending on what kind of range some kind of commercial application will need. But I mean, if you want to take that thing out of the wood with the trailer for and coming back after that, you see, with the base battery pack, I doubt you'll be able to get more than 150 miles of range with a trailer on it, depending, of course, on what kind of payload the trailer has. So the 135, 180 kilowatt-hours version are certainly more useful. And, I mean, you're useful in terms, if you want to compare them to gas-powered counterparts, which is, of course, going to be what most people are going to do, because the market for pickup trucks, it's, of course, a huge market in the U.S., and the goal here is to try to get some market share from gas-powered pickup trucks. I don't think the Rivian is going to be as much about trying to convince current electric vehicle owners that, oh, you should also need a pickup truck. There's certainly going to be a few of those, myself included. I mean, if like I'm getting into like e-bikes, so I like, I want things to be able to carry those. And that's why I'm interested in the Rivian and actually put down the reservation for it. But the bulk of the market is really going to try to get some market shares from those millions of pickup trucks that are being sold in the U.S. every year. It's in the millions, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So to get those, I mean, at $69,000 before incentive, that's before incentive, so that could help too if those are still around by the time the Rivian hit the market. The base version could fit the important part of the market, but when you start comparing the compatibilities, I think the 135 kilowatt-hour version is going to be the most capable here. What do you think?
Yeah, you definitely going to want as much range as you can get on these. The aerodynamics of any truck are going to be not really helpful in getting range on a EV, although those are huge battery packs. I'm not sure how heavy those are going to be when they do come out. But, you know, like you said, the pickup is obviously super interesting, but I would note that the SUV version is like quite a lot different, a lot bigger than the model, even the Model X, Tesla Model X, or the Audi e-tron, which I kind of feel like
it's not that much bigger than the Model X, actually. If you look at the actual stats, look.
But I'm talking about like the tires and the clearance. And the way it rides.
Yeah, the clearance is certainly a lot bigger. The angle that you can take are certainly a lot bigger, that's for sure. But in terms of actual sizes, sorry.
I mean, you're not really taking the Model X off-road.
No.
I hope.
But even then, like, it's still, it's even more expensive than, I think it starts at $72,000.
Right.
So the price is pretty close to the Model X, too. Do you want to be taking, like, with the, and that's also with the base version, so it's going to be, I'm sure you're going to be able to configure that to over $100,000. Do you want to take a $100,000 premium SUV off-road? Not that much. I mean, it's
not really off-road. Yeah. But, you know, back in the woods a little bit would be kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, coming back to the pickup truck, some great other utility feature that they unveil, like the roof. The roof is able to fit a ton of different roof rack system that are going to be very useful in terms of to transport stuff. Same thing, you have a bed rack system too. So a ton of great utility features. And in the bed, you also have power outlets if you have to charge those power tools or any other equipment. And I mean, we've been pretty excited about Rivian before they unveil anything, because unlike what we've seen from other startups over the years, like the Faraday Future, the Lucid Motors, and stuff like that, they were big on creating a lot of hype before ever having anything really to show for. Rivian has been working on the technology for like 9 years now. They're just now unveiling something, and they're doing it like almost 2 years after having purchased their own factory and invested millions of dollars in the factory. To be honest, I thought they were a little bit closer to production, though, when they unveiled the pickup truck this week because of that. But they look like they are being... sorry, what's the word? Being more cautious, really, with their timeline. We know what happens with Tesla and everything. So they announced the unveil a car now, and announced production in about 2 years. And they said that the truck that we're seeing right now, at least for the pickup truck, that it's about like 99% production ready in terms of all the features. So they've locked the design of most of the components and send that to the suppliers. And they're doing, of course, their own thing at the former Mitsubishi plant in Illinois that they purchased. So, I mean, I could see them delivering this on time, really.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of met every goal that they've set out to do, and they've been pretty cautious there. One of the YouTube commenters is asking if we know order numbers, and they said they weren't going to publish order numbers, but they were like very pleasantly surprised by what they were getting in. They said if they hit over 100,000, they would say something. So they haven't reached 100,000, I guess.
Yeah,
is all we can say.
Yeah, I mean, and that's partly why I ordered one. I mean, it's a refundable deposit. They have the same thing as Tesla, $1,000 deposit that's refundable. And I want people to know that there is demand for that kind of pickup truck. I mean, I'm sure people are going to go for it. And I can see why. Tesla has been doing reservation since the Roadster, really. But it has become a big thing with the Model 3 when they announced like those 300,000 plus reservations. And before that, Tesla already delivered the Roadster, already delivered the Model S, already delivered the Model X. So people had a lot of confidence into Tesla delivering the Model 3. Well, I say people. People that were fan enough that they wanted to place a reservation. Tesla still had a ton of detractor back then. But Rivian doesn't have that kind of credibility, even though our self-electric have been hyping them a little bit because of the approach that I just described, and other publications have done similar things too. But I can get why people wouldn't be ready to send $1,000 to that company just yet. And they raised like over $500 million. So they have the money really to deliver the truck. Just not maybe in a very high volume just yet. But as a first product, it's certainly normal to just start out with maybe a few hundred units per week capacity and then trying to ramp that up as they can deliver them profitably.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like everything's falling in place. And, you know, we should note that when one gives them $1,000 to put down, you're kind of investing in the company, just like with Tesla. And, you know, if they did, hypothetically hit that 100,000 reservation number, that would be $100 million of money to, you know, invest it in the company. I doubt they'd hit that. Maybe 10,000. That's still $10 million. That's not chump change.
And not just the actual money, the deposit for the money, but it's, if you place a deposit, it's a great show of confidence in the company and the It's there's a lot more chance that patient will actually go through with the order versus just a reservation without deposit, and that's great for investors. So they can go back to investors after that and say, there's 10,000 people that were willing to give us $1,000 to reserve that truck, so there's real demand for it, and then they can try to raise more money if they need to in order to bring the vehicle to production.
Right, and also I think Tesla mentioned parts. It's like a lot easier to get parts when you have, you know, 100,000 people putting $10,000 or $1,000 down on it.
Yeah, talking to suppliers, you mean?
Suppliers are much more likely to extend some loans or, you know,
to invest themselves in some production capacity in order to deliver the volume that they need. Yeah, for sure. And the launch was kind of weird because, I mean, they invited us to an unveiling event at the Griffith Observatory on Monday night. But then on Sunday, they sent out an email to the publication like, yeah, the embargo lifts up Monday morning before the vehicle even launches. So, I mean, they sent us about the picture and all the specs on Monday, on Sunday night, and for people to post on Monday morning, which we did. And like I said, the specs were just unbelievable. The pictures look good, though. I was kind of concerned with the headlights.
That's the big.
Yeah, but then we went to see the truck in person at the observatory the same night, and the truck looked great in person. Well, it looked good in pictures too. Like I said, it was just the headlight that I thought was weirded me out a little. But in person, everything looked great. The headlights still take some getting used to. I talked to the CEO about it, RJ Scaringe, and he said that they know it's a polarizing feature, and they wanted to make it like a feature that you know it's a Rivian truck right away when you see the headlights. But a bunch of other automakers have done that, having some sort of signature headlights, though they're still normally somewhat conventional, you just different light patterns, but the most headlights are horizontal in design. This one is more like they describe it as a stadium headlight, which I guess makes sense. Like if you go to a stadium, the all the lights are vertical, and now the same thing here. But I feel like I could get used to it. And the whole truck was looked great. Like it didn't feel like a prototype at all. It felt like an actual product. Like he said, it was 99% production ready, which I believed him when he said that. It's the body's aluminum though. Which is great for, which is lightweight. It's what this was Tesla's approach with Model S and the Model X. The my only concern is that if they make it an Envertur truck, they make it like it's a great thing to get off-road and everything, and you get off-road, I mean, it's easier to get some dents and stuff like that, and we know a dent in aluminum that can be very expensive to repair. So that's a bit more of a concern of mine. Well, actually, it's a concern of mine, but I wouldn't really take that truck off-road that much. More about like carrying big stuff and some projects that I have in mind if I do go through with the order someday. But yeah, I'm very excited about the product. Looks awesome. And the specs, if they can deliver a reasonable price, they might have some kind of breakthrough here in terms of battery costs and stuff like that, because 180 kilowatt hours. Like I said, we don't know the price exactly yet, though. But it would be the biggest battery capacity in the passenger vehicle, I should say. Depending on the timing of the Roadster, really. The Roadster is supposed to have 200 kilowatt hours, but is it going to be available before or after the pickup truck, you think?
Good question. Two pretty unknowns.
Yeah, Tesla said 2020, but
yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, so check out on Electrek. We have we had a report on it on Monday, like I said, but also published a closer look to it. We they gave us access to the truck and before the launch of the before they opened the floor show, and we have a picture of the powertrain and a few videos of all the bed works and the interior and the charge ports and things like that. The SUV, well, we already talked a little bit about the SUV. Exact same platform, so all the same specs, basically. Just instead of having a bed, you have a third row.
Yeah, I think that'll be popular for, the big families.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what, you buy a Suburban or a Ford Expedition or or Cadillac Escalade or any of those. And those are already expensive vehicles. Those are $60,000 to $80,000 already. So it's not crazy to think about paying a actually about that same amount or a little bit more for an electric version.
Yeah, if Rivian can establish itself as a premium brand, because those truck comes with some kind of status, if you will. So if Rivian can establish itself as such, I think they can get some market share from those kind of trucks buyer, just like those black SUVs for fleet and stuff like that. I think they could do that because the interior looks very comfortable, looks great. The same high screen real estate inside and everything. Yeah, it's a great SUV.
Yeah, and so I think the SUV is coming out around the same time as the pickup, or is that?
That was my understanding too. Did I write the number here? RG did told me like the percentage of components that they share between the pickup truck and the vehicle was incredibly high. I want to say 92% now, but
oh yeah, it was something big like that.
Yeah, so it's very basically the same vehicle with a few different body parts for the back and like the wheelbase being a bit different, and of course third row seats. So they can bring those two to market like fairly quickly, and the truck, the SUV is a little bit more expensive. So, if in terms of like bringing to production first, in order to try to make it profitable as soon as possible, makes sense to launch it as quick as possible too. Audi e-tron, if you want to speak about the e-tron a little bit?
Yeah, so Audi is the one who paid for my ticket and my hotel for the LA Auto Show, so thank you for Audi for that. Hopefully, it didn't change my coverage at all. I think it's an amazing, beautiful car. I wish it would be out, next year, but it's not going to be out until 2021. The e-tron Gran Turismo or GT, they're calling it a concept. But there was a car there.
Doesn't look like a concept, right? It looks like a production vehicle, though.
No, and it doesn't. And the designer, was pretty adamant about this is what it's going to look like. We're not changing anything. I mean, they might put some different door handles on, and it may or may not have rear view side mirrors. But for the most part, what you see is what you're going to get. And it's not surprising. I mean, it looks like a, in my opinion, improved version of the, I think, what is it, the A7 Fastback or the S7 Fastback, which I think is a really good design. Like, again, they paid for my hotel, but I really like this car.
They didn't pay for my hotel, and I think it looks great, too.
Okay, so there you go. Obviously, the knee-jerk reaction thing is to, well, compare it to the Model S, and no, its specs in a lot of areas aren't quite as impressive. I think the 0 to 60 time is quoted as 3.5 seconds, which, you can get down to 2.4 seconds with a insane, ludicrous mode. So it's in that respect, it's not as impressive, although it will charge at the same 800-volt 350 kilowatt is what it's called, but it's actually probably closer to about 270 kilowatt. And that's, for the first little bit of charging. So grain of salt, but it'll charge much faster than any car on the road today. And, as will the Taycan and the Mission E. So impressive car in a lot of respects. Like, it's gorgeous. The interior is really nice. I know a lot of people complain about Tesla's sparse interior. If you're more a buttons and dials and leather and wood type of person, this is going to appeal to you a lot more. Obviously, Audi's name and brand have been around for a long time, so you don't have to worry about the CEO saying something stupid and the company going under. Not that that's a problem with Tesla, but you know, some people may have that concern. What else? The charging speed.
The wheels look crazy. The wheels are awesome.
Yeah, really nice wheels. You know, the interior was super nice. They had, like, you know, it's lit up. It says e-tron in the back, and it's got some cool stuff in the front. I mean, it was, you know, it's just a super impressive car. They had Robert Downey Jr., right, which I guess there was an Audi in one of his Iron Man movies, so that was the connection there. I don't know.
I don't get why they bring those cars every time, like Rivian at the Rihanna, Audi as Robert Downey Jr.,
and yeah, there was a few.
And
few
Nissan
other.
Had, shit, what's her name? Margot Robbie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So all the electric vehicle stuff was attached to a movie star.
By the way, listeners, we had the opportunity to interview Margot Robbie for 15 minutes.
10 minutes.
We were given that opportunity, and we turned it down to talk to a bunch of guys about bidirectional charging of houses.
The number of guys right now that are face-palming, like, what are you guys doing?
I know.
I mean,
it just seemed like the right decision at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was actually like, I was, you know, it was...
You didn't even know who she was when you turned it down, though. I had to tell
right.
you. Like.
That's true. Also, I mean, I knew the story, though, that, you know, it was a female celebrity that... Not that
was getting paid to promote the products and everything. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. I probably wouldn't have wanted to interview him. Yeah. Although, yeah, she did seem pretty nice. Anyway, back to the
Audi e-tron. I mean, I think the e-tron it's gonna get more people into EVs because there's some Audi. Yeah, I think it's a weird thing in the auto industry, that kind of loyalty that some brands are getting. It's just crazy. But it is what it is. So some Audi super fans here that wouldn't buy a Tesla if you put a gun to their head, maybe they'd buy this one. That's an electric car, so it's more mileage that would have burned gas. Instead, you're going to burn some electrons if that's a thing in physics. Sorry, I'm completely sick right now.
Yeah.
My head feels like it weighs 2 tons. And it, like you said, I mean, the car is just gorgeous, really. I mean, paying for the hotels or not, they're very beautiful.
So, you know, like, it's not coming out for a while, which is a bummer. But, you know, like, there's a lot of, as you said, there's a lot of people who don't buy Teslas and would love to have an Audi EV. And this one is as good as, I mean, you know, you could also get the e-tron SUV, but this is a nice looking, fast, charges fast, kind of ticks all the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And we're just talking about Nissan. So, rumor has it that Nissan was going to finally unveil the Leaf with the 60 kilowatt hour battery pack at the Helio Auto Show, but with what happened last week with Carlos Gunz, the chairman of Nissan, being arrested by the Japanese prosecutors over some kind of financial misconduct, and then he ended up being hosted by he's been hosted by Nissan for sure, but I think he's been hosted also by Mitsubishi, where he was also chairman, because of the Renault Nissan Mitsubishi alliance. And I'm not sure if he's been hosted by Renault, where he had some He had more control over Renault than anything else, because he was CEO there too. I know he's been suspended. I'm not sure if he's completely hosted yet. Have you read the recent article about where the interviews with Carlos since he's been out of jail?
No, I actually didn't even know he was giving interviews.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the interviews are like statements and such, but he's calling it a conspiracy. He says that it's a coup, that it was all made up. And it's a coup from Nissan to try to oust him of the company.
You know, I heard that he was trying to sell Nissan to Renault, or merge Renault and Nissan.
He wanted to completely merge them instead of just the alliance,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe that was Nissan's way of...
Yeah, that's basically what he's saying. Like, he was pushing for that, and Nissan didn't want it. And instead of just trying to block it and on the board, that they decided to just shame him and oust him with listening. I mean, it's a conspiracy theory. wouldn't be the first time that the conspiracy theory ends up being true. But, I mean, apparently there was enough evidence that the Japanese authorities decided to arrest him. So, I don't know. Either way, that created a whole scandal last week. And apparently Nissan decided to postpone the launch of the 60 kilowatt hour Nissan Leaf. Just the launch, apparently the timeline to production hasn't changed. So a bunch of people said that the actual car was delayed, but it's the launch of the car that was delayed, which is weird because I feel like they could have unveiled that anyway. But what they did unveil instead is Nissan Energy, which was also pretty cool, if you ask me. It's something that Nissan has been pushing for a while now, but it has never really been commercialized yet. There's a bunch of test program in Japan since 2013, I think. Then last year, they also started stuff in the UK with the launch of the next-gen Leaf, which when they launched it, they actually promoted that as a feature, the fact that you can use a bi-directional chargers with a car and send energy from the battery pack to the home or to the building. What we would generally call it the vehicle-to-grid system, V2G, but they are focusing more on a vehicle-to-home and vehicle-to-building, so it's not as much as sending energy to the grid, but sending energy to power your home or to power a building. And the bulk of the announcement really was the partnership with Fermata Energy. So those are the guys that we talked to primarily at the event, like you said, instead of speaking with the beautiful Margot Robbie. And they developed basically the actual device, the bidirectional charger that you plug your Leaf into, and that connects it to your building's electrical system or your home's electrical system. But their main product really is software, if you ask me, because what they do is really they give you the opportunity to use some energy from your battery pack to shave the peak demand charges that you get. That's mainly in buildings. So a vehicle to home, that would be more as like a backup system. So you can use your car as a backup system. That's just useful in terms of like power outages and stuff. But where the money is a peak demand shaving, which the peak demand charges can be extremely expensive, especially in some market. They were mentioning, especially San Diego, where they have a test program right now at the Nissan Design Studio. And so the software knows when the peak demand charges are going to be the most expensive. And then at that time, instead of your buildings adding to the demand, you just power the building with your car, which can be just for a few minutes. So doesn't necessarily deplete your entire battery pack. It's just in order to avoid the peak demand charges, which sometimes can rack up into the hundreds of dollars. And
even thousands of dollars. And theoretically, it could put electricity back in the grid. And the idea is to kind of do, excuse me, what, you know, like when you get a Nest thermostat and you hook it to your electricity provider access to it. So instead of a brownout, they can turn off your air conditioning, something like that. Mm-hmm. So this is the same thing where they're going around to different electric service providers and saying, hey, look, we've got this like big, basically this virtual huge battery with all these Nissan drivers around. And they said something like, what was it, 10 gigawatts hours of
potential energy capacity with the whole fleet? But
right,
that's theoretical.
That's located all over the place, and you know, some of those are off the road, and the battery packs will go down. There's a lot of, and some don't even have CHAdeMO. I think their early Nissan Leafs don't even have CHAdeMO. So anyway, they've got this big virtual battery, basically, and instead of these electric companies having to fire up these peaker plants to meet revenue demand, they can gather this, you know, huge virtual battery and flip a switch, and all of a sudden these Nissans, instead of sucking electricity from the grid or being idle, they're actually putting electricity into the grid, and theoretically then these electric companies wouldn't have to fire up these very expensive, very pollution heavy, very dirty peaker plants, which is kind of good for everybody. You know, the Nissan drivers gets a bunch of extra cash. The electric company doesn't have to turn on the peaker plants, and nobody has to breathe, you know, the poor air, and all the carbon doesn't go up. So it seems like a great solution all around. I'm actually, you know, kind of jealous that my Chevy Bolt or my Tesla doesn't do something like that. And, you know, it is kind of weird to me that Tesla, with all of its, you know, connections to
electric utilities.
Yeah, the utilities isn't doing something similar.
They've been talking about it for years, but they never really ended up into an actual product.
Do we even know if the Tesla ports on cars can go bidirectional?
I mean, Nissan said that it's built into the CHAdeMO protocol, so Tesla is technically compatible with the CHAdeMO since they have an adapter. So
that's true.
I would assume that there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it. On Nissan's side in this front, they said that all they want to do is make sure that it doesn't affect negatively the battery pack, so you can draw energy from it without impacting the longevity of the pack, and they're confident that you can do it without doing that. So they just see it as an added value to your car to be able to make some money off of it, and so that's for an individual owner really. That's going to be commercialized, they think, more toward the end of next year. The early next year, they're going to start commercializing the commercial product, really, for fleets. So they're going to focus, they said, mainly on municipal fleet, because so it's more like a partnership between Fermat and Nissan, where the municipality could start updating their fleet with Nissan Leafs vehicles, and Fermat will provide the the bidirectional charging devices and connect those to the municipal buildings, and then you have not just like one car, but you have like a whole fleet of car, and you don't need to deplete them all at the same time. You can manage between all the different cars, so they can always have some charge, and just start shaving that peak demand charges. They say that there's a ton of money in it, really. That's basically a gold mine.
Yeah, and I don't think most people understand how expensive demand charges are. I mean, once you get into the brownout zone, it can get into the tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, he was talking. I think like five times a year, it gets up to $2 or $3 per kilowatt hours, something like that.
Yeah.
So like in California, you can get the kilowatt hour normally for like 16-20 cents a kilowatt hour. And then so the price goes up 10 times.
Yeah, and if you're running a big company with that's a lot of power,
yeah,
then that gets really expensive quick.
An hour of that, and thousands of the dollar racked up. So if you have a few Nissan Leaf in your fleet connected to those Fermato Better Show Charger, then that's a few thousand bucks that you save a few times a year. That a lot's probably going to pay from those Better Show Chargers in a few years. And even like cover the cost of your, they said maybe not the Leaf itself, but at least the fuels from the Leaf. So, and if you need the car anyway, then it's more gas saving or electricity saving, I should say. All right, first drive in the Byton M-Byte electric SUV. Byton. You guys remember Byton?
So I was kind of split on this. I've heard from a very reliable source who's working with the company. Actually, we can say it's Tom Milani, that the company's got their act together. They've built a bunch of first runs. This car is actually happening, although the one we were in didn't drive terribly well.
Wasn't their powertrain, he said.
Wasn't their powertrain, and they were quick to tell us that. The other thing is, like, that display is, like, crazy and gorgeous and distracting, but in reality it's not, there's no like huge innovation there. It's basically just a, you know, take a 70 inch TV, like cut it in half, and that's it. So
49 inch,
whatever it is,
you cannot get that thing right because you just, it's so much bigger than you would ever think.
It's a big screen.
Yeah.
And so they had to lower the whole, you know, dashboard and where the steering wheel comes out of as well. So,
I mean, it looks like a great car for self-driving. I mean, it would be a great interior design for self-driving, but it's not right now. Is it going to be when they launch? The whole thing is built around self-driving, but we don't know if they're going to actually have it when it's time to launch it.
Yeah, and it's got swivel seats. I guess those seats in the front turn around so they can face backwards.
Yeah, I don't think they can face backwards. Did he say that? I think he said they just get some kind of angle so that people in the back can actually see the screen better. So I don't think they actually go... you cannot face the people in the back seat. I think they just get us some kind of angle so that you can see that screen, because if it's self-driving, of course, that screen's going to show some kind of movie or something and you can watch it. But yeah, I mean, the design look, like I said, very great for self-driving, but then you need to solve the self-driving problem. So I'm gonna be very impressed by Byton if they show me that they have some self-driving technology that's more secure than a human driving. If they do at that point, then it's going to be an impressive product. But for driving, if you actually need to drive that car first, because my understanding is that they have the same approach as Tesla, right? They build all the cars with all the necessary hard drive to be fully self-driving, and then they're going to eventually update the software to, because that car is launching next year. So are they saying there's no way
they're going to have it next year. Yeah. I mean, the driving part.
Unless they do some things like level 3, like just on the highway, it's fully self-driving, and you can actually use that big screen. But then when you're city driving, you're not. But even then, like even for city driving, I don't think that's a great design to be able to drive with that thing. I suggested maybe something like the screen goes into a driving mode where it blacks out basically completely or something, and you just get like an instrument cluster like Tesla does with the front screen.
Yeah, and right now they have some weird things in it where like it recognizes who the driver is and it actually takes their heartbeat and weighs them, which I can see being very unpopular.
Yeah, I mean, it shows their weight on the screen and everything. Like, why would it do that?
You know, when you're picking up girls, you want to, I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Anyway. Yeah. So, and I mean, if that's the only innovation, because the car didn't ride so well.
Well, like I said, we cannot, it doesn't matter. They said that that was a show car. They only wanted to showcase their interior experience, and they use a show car company that provides a whole powertrain and everything, and they build the platform on top of it. I don't know why they did that, because if they're launching next year, they have to have their own full powertrain platform prototype for sure, but it looks like they just want to focus on the interior experience. But yeah, it was you can look the video that we posted on YouTube. It's a shitty experience in the car. Yeah, actually, at first, you thought it was not bad, like you saw.
Actually, in the front seat, it was a lot better than the back.
Myself and Jamie were in the back seat, and so when Seth said, is that your own suspension? Like, yeah, it's not bad, though. It's not your suspension. Like, Jamie and I looked at each other. He's like, what the hell he's talking about? We've been bouncing up and down here.
You don't want to be mean, either.
For like 10 minutes.
Not to the guy's face, anyway.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, it could be very promising if they actually deliver some decent self-driving feature on that thing. It could be a cool car. And you said there's no really innovation, but the price, that they said they want that thing to start at 45,000.
I won't hold my breath for that.
But. Yeah, but if they do, I mean, it's like it's a decent premium car for that price. They call it an SUV, but damn, it's like the Jaguar I-Pace. I'd say like it's
right. But actually, I think it's even a little bit bigger than the I-Pace.
It's bigger than the I-Pace, you think?
I mean, bigger, maybe not higher up, but
yeah, it's lower than the I-Pace for sure. Anyway, it's something to look for, but right now it's still. A little bit vaporware, in my opinion.
Yeah, still two to be determined.
So not really at the Elliott show, but in the margin of the show, ChargePoint announced that they were raising a $240 million round of funding, so the biggest round to date. Daimler, BMW, Chevron, Braemar Energy Venture, Siemens, they all invested into the round. American Electric Power, plenty of current investors for them and new ones pulled the money together to make the biggest round to date, putting the ChargePoint overall funding to over $500 million. And they're going to use that to keep expanding EV infrastructure, which is awesome. It's growing big business. I mean, between them, between EVgo, between Tesla, between Electrify America.
Yeah, it seems like they're going all over the world. ChargePoint's a little different because they sell to private companies or public companies. They charge, and then they have the credit card thing, so you can set the price. So like if you're a hotel and you want to give people free charging, then you can do that. Or if you know you're on the side of the road and you want to make some money, then you could do that.
Yeah, they sell the hardware, they sell the software, but then you have to have your own system. They don't operate the network.
And you supply the electricity as well.
Yeah, they like you have that model, and you have it's EVgo that owns their own station, I think.
Yeah,
EVgo does the other thing. ChargePoint is more like here in Canada, Flow does the same thing where they sell the stations and everything, and they sell the software and all the management for the operating the station, but they don't actually own them. They sell them to people that want their own network. Then GM also had an announcement at the show. Well, not really at the show. No. A very cool EV announcement where they said they're killing the Chevy Volt. That's the Volt with a V.
And that's they're stopping production in March, and I imagine they'll probably have some
supply left over.
Yeah. So maybe 2019 at some point they'll probably stop selling the Volt, which kind of sucks. I think the Volt was great training wheels for people who are a little bit scared about going full EV. I think every Volt owner or most Volt owners were probably making the next step after their
Volt owner. Bunch of people went from the Volt to the Volt EV.
Yeah. You know, that's the car that Bob Lutz kind of launched. So that's, I'm sure, sad for him.
Oh, he's crying, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It had a good run. I mean, it launched in 2011 or something?
Yeah.
I still remember the prototype. I mean, the prototype was something else. If they ever actually come back with the Volt, they should release a 2009 prototype of the Volt. That was a cool-looking car.
Yeah, it looks nothing like what actually came out.
Yeah, but the actual announcement that they were killing the Volt came with a whole restructuring thing that they announced that involved closing down 3 assembly factories and 2 propulsion factories in North America, all of them in the U.S. except from the Oshawa assembly factory in Ontario, Canada. So those factories were producing the Volt, but also the Cruze, the Cadillac CT6, and the Buick LaCrosse. So a bunch of sedans, basically. They are killing the sedans from their portfolio, much like Ford did earlier this year. So the sedans are just not doing great in North America. So they're moving and focusing on their trucks and their SUVs. So that's going to result in about 50,000 layoffs. And at the same time, like they didn't make the announcement like, hey, we are laying off 15,000 people and closing 5 factories. They said we are restructuring to focus on electric vehicles and autonomous vehicle. But they talked about like doubling their investment, but everything about that was vague. What was really concrete was really much their layoffs and the factory closures.
Well, you know, we didn't talk about it at the time. But it's interesting in this context. I believe a Ford factory guy said that to build an EV, you need about like a third or two thirds of the resources as building.
Not the resources. I think the labor hours, like the work time or something. Is that it?
Right. So theoretically, maybe. I mean, you know, they're not trying to fit that into their statement or anything. But you know, if you're making a million gas cars and you're going to switch to making a million electric cars, you're theoretically going to need, you know, quite a bit fewer people.
Yeah, some people said that, and other people said that they're just trying to twist the arm of the union, because they're not like officially like closing those plants. They're not allocating any vehicles, those plants. So they're saying we're not going to send you any car to build there, which is the same thing as closing it, but it's more like there's going to be nothing to do there, so there's not going to be any job there. So if you want jobs, maybe renegotiate your salaries. So I don't know. So what happened next? Of course, our big fan of the show, Donald Trump, got involved and said that he's, well, basically threatened to cut all subsidies to GM. But the only subsidy that he actually mentioned was the electric car subsidies that GM is getting. And that's all he called them, electric car subsidies. They didn't even specify what kind of subsidies was especially talking about. But because he was closing factories in the U.S., he lashed out to them. And I mean, what's weird, because when you say electric car subsidies, we assume that he's talking about the federal tax rate for electric vehicles, $7,500. But that's not even going to GM directly. It's going to the buyers of the car. It's a credit on the tax burden of electrical buyers. And it's already set to phase out. I think they're going to hit the limit, the 200,000 delivery limit by the end of the year. So they're going to phase out in the next year or two. Not going to be any credit for them. So sounds like a bit of an empty threat for General Motors. I mean, what we wrote about it, that was actually Jamie's point. It was funny. He said, if Trump really wants to get back at GM, what he should do is actually increase the fuel standard consumption standards, because that's something that GM was lobbying against. And the EPA, Trump's EPA, actually conceded to them, and they said, okay, we're going to freeze the standard and not increase them, just like asking. So if you'd go back on that and actually increase the standard, like GM was begging them not to, that would be getting back to them instead of electric car subsidies that is running away anyway.
Somehow I don't see that happening, but amusing nonetheless.
Yeah, he probably already forgot about it and move on to something else. He has his own thing to worry about. Yeah, I mean, some quick testimony. It's already an hour in. I did post a little op-ed about Tesla potentially like trying to buy one of those GM factories that are going to be shut down at some point next year if nothing else changed. We all know what happened at the first time. The last time that Tesla bought a GM factory, or really a Toyota GM factory, the NUMMI plant, turned out great for Tesla. And that thing is now producing 400,000 vehicles per year, almost at the production rate, really, between the Model S, Model 3, and Model X.
And growing.
And they already employ more people than NUMMI was employing back then. So we know that Tesla does a lot of vertical integration. So even though the production rate is not really at the level that it was back when Toyota and GM was operating it, they do have a ton of employees then. So if you want to save some jobs, maybe make a deal with Tesla. Some subsidies that Trump seems to like, just not when it's going to electric cars, but when it's going to coal, and they are very great, the subsidies. Very quickly too, Elon mentioned some software updates coming, mainly for the rain sensor. So as you know, as Autopilot 2.0 owners know, you don't have a regular rain sensor on the car. The car has automatic windshield wipers that rely on the Autopilot cameras and the neural net system instead. They said it's going to update the rain sensing neural net next month. That's in December.
That would be good. My it rains quite a bit before my wipers come on, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, a bunch of people apparently with the 2.0. Just they don't use the automatic wiper, they just focus on the manual ones because the rain sensing is just not as good. That's a change next month, and the maybe the same update or some other update is going to also include a bunch of new Easter eggs. Elon is talking about romance mode, so I feel like it's going to be some dim lights and some music maybe that starts on our own or something. Some toilet humor. We know that Elon has quite the sense of humor, so maybe what's going to be about with some toilet and more video games. So Elon has been really happy with the reception of the Tesla Atari. the Atari games at the launch, and they're going to want to add some more, not just Atari now, maybe some more modern one. I know we know he's been talking
not,
with like some...
not Nintendo, though.
No, Nintendo is not on board with it. Nintendo likes to control the whole experience. Yeah. They're not a fan of emulators. They want to control the hardware, too, so that they can control the whole experience. And we all know that a car is not necessarily the best hardware for video games, so I'm not blaming Nintendo here. But we know he's been talking to other game developers, and maybe it's going to be some modern game. Like, you know how when they launch a video game, it's an Xbox exclusive, it's a PlayStation exclusive.
That'd be interesting.
Can you see a day where we're going to launch a Tesla exclusive video game that's for the first month or two is just available in the Tesla vehicle or something?
Maybe like a Forza 5 or something. Or a driving game. Since the
so you're driving with the wheel, but you're looking at the screen here. Yeah. Finally, equip. And we got Flash News here. One of our other editors just ordered a Model 3. So, congrats to Trevor. He just sent you a text and just ordered a Model 3. So, that's probably like what the tenth Tesla on the electric team. Well, Trevor, no, on the 9-to-5 team, I should say. Trevor doesn't. Well, no, he does contribute to electric with the with the green deals and everything. So
we've got quite a few Teslas in house now.
Yeah. So congrats to Trevor, and congrats to Tesla. They achieve at least briefly the 1,000 Model 3 vehicles a day to milestone, I should say. But they weren't able really to sustain it, so that's been an issue, a recurring issue with Tesla. They do like some kind of burst of production so that they can test see where the weakness are. And this time it was the body lines was a test, but they could theoretically make 7,000 vehicles a week, but the sustaining it right now is just doesn't seem very feasible. But Elon is pushing for it, and he's asking the employees to send out some suggestion if for the section of the production line we can make it at a steady 1,000 pace per day, 1,000 units pace. And they're also focusing on the cost. So he did mention some interesting comment about the standard battery pack. He said that if they were to make the standard Model 3 battery pack right now, the Model 3 would cost about $38,000. And as you know, Tesla is trying to sell that car for $35,000 before incentive and before any options, really. And a bunch of people are waiting for that car. Tons of people are waiting for that car.
Although, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should just buy one right now.
Yeah, the great argument about it today with your post. I mean, we can get into that after that for sure, because it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, he said $38,000, that's what he's making right now. And his point was that there's 10,000 units, unique parts and processes in making the Model 3. So, on average, those processes cost $3.8 per parts or process. So he says getting down to under $35,000, because you want to make some money on that car, even though basically no car is going to sell for $35,000. Some people, almost everyone's going to make a few options. But anyway, he says if you find a way to shave just a few cents per processes, then you can, if everyone does that, then you can quickly get that price down. So he's asking people to do that. Just find some very simple process efficiency saving improvements, and for the Tesla to be able to make that car. But what I did mention about that is that if they make the car right now, it would be $38,000. But my understanding is that the biggest difference is going to be the battery pack, and my understanding is that battery pack is relying on a new battery module design that is going to come out early next year. That's what the standard battery pack is relying on. So just with that alone should bring the price a lot closer to $35,000, in my opinion. So that could make a big difference. So I was very happy about that email when I read that. I thought, like, it's a good sign, really. Still sad that they can sustain that 7,000 units per week. But I think they should focus more on the cost itself. And as they focus on the cost, then they can gradually ramp up production to have the decent production level when they can produce that $35,000 car, because that's going to be another dumb and lever, really. That's going to create a lot of dumb and for the Model 3. But let's end on you making your case for people to not buy the not wait for the $3,000 Model 3 and order. That's where we just mentioned that Trevor just ordered, basically, because he was convinced really by your argument about the mid-range Model 3.
Yeah, so, I mean, all right. So, right now, if you order one, you're going to get one with a $7,500 U.S. federal tax credit. And that's obviously if you have to make enough money to get taxed over $7,500. If you wait for the $35,000 one, you're probably waiting until the second half of 2019, where the credit will be about $1,875. So you're talking about a $5,000 difference, just right off the bat, in money that you get from the government. Actually, a little bit more, almost $6,000. So the car you get, if you get one right now, ends up being. I got to go to the page, but it ends up being like $3,800. Sorry, $38,000. And then if you get a car in the second half of 2019, it'll end up being with the credit about $5,000 less. So what do you get for your $5,000? You get the extra range, which is significant, like 40 or 50 extra miles. You get a faster car because the extra batteries allow the motor to go faster, accelerate, and then usually a higher top speed, but I don't think we have specifics on that. Then you get, you know, the glass roof, the premium sound, premium seats, and all the other extras that go along with the long range. So when you go to sell your car in 3 or 5 years or whenever you sell it, it's going to be at least a $5,000 difference. So you're going to get that extra $5,000 back at the end. But during that time that you have the car, you're going to have all these nice things like the extra range, the extra top speed, the extra 0-60 time, as well as the glass roof, which is really nice for the passengers in the back. It feels really open. I feel like I'm trying to sell a car right now. But this is my...
They're all good points there, really. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been going through this myself, like thinking about, you know, should I have bought the car then? Because originally I was thinking about getting the $35,000 model. And, and you're also saved, like, theoretically, if you're driving a gas car around right now and, you know, polluting more, you're going to save a lot of money in the electricity over the 6 months that you're driving a Tesla rather than a gas car. So that's the spiel there. I think, you know, for a lot of people, if they really think about it, it's a pretty compelling offer, especially now that it doesn't sound like the tax credit's going to be extended. So, I mean, you know, the future is uncertain. The tax credit could get extended. It could totally go away. All kinds of things could happen. There's tons of other options too. You know, there's the Kona's coming out. Chevy Bolt's not a bad car. I have a Bolt. It's actually kind of fun. Plenty of other options.
But if you were really going for the Model 3 anyway, like you're really making the argument for the people in the U.S., because of course that's, we're all talking about the U.S. federal tax rate here. If you are in the U.S., if you know that you're going to have a $7,500 federal tax burden this year, because it's not transferable to next year, so that's also important. If you were running for the Model 3 standard, you had the tax burden, then you should really consider probably the mid-range version because of the resale value, really, of the car. So depending on how long you were waiting for. Of course, if you can just not pay for that, then you actually needed a $35,000 version with a half tax credit or four tax credits, then you have to wait. And there's just no way around it. Or you consider those other options that you just mentioned, like the Kona, or
right.
Though we don't recommend the Kona just yet because they haven't let us drive it yet. Though that should change relatively soon. We are in contact with Hyundai right now to be able to drive that car in the next month or so.
Yeah, it sounds like January.
January, so we're going to try that. Then on Sunday, I'm flying out to Abu Dhabi to try out the e-tron, the Audi e-tron, the SUV. So we're going to have a report on that next week about, and it's going to be on Friday, actually. I don't think I can post anything until Friday, so I'm going to probably make that post, and then we're going to hop on the podcast real quick. Hopefully, I'm feeling better by then, and feeling better for the trip, too, I hope, to be able to actually enjoy the drive. And hopefully it doesn't affect my opinion of the truck. Yeah, thanks a lot for tuning in, guys. We're going to see you next time. Same time next week. Ciao.